Welcome to Brain Lady Speaks with Julie Anderson. Julie Brain Lady Anderson is considered to be one of the nation's top experts on the brain-personality connection. She has been inspiring her audiences to fire up their brains and ignite positive changes in their relationships. And now, she is here to bring that knowledge to you. The information she shares will help those who hear it to accelerate their success in life and business through the discovery of their natural gifts and maximizing their brain power. When you learn to tap into the potential of your natural gifts and the power of the brain-mind connection, there is no limit to what you can accomplish. Today and every Wednesday on Brain Lady Speaks, you'll explore the latest findings to see how they have practical application in your life. And now, get ready to join Julie Anderson on the Brain Lady Speaks radio show. Take it away, Julie.
Welcome to the Brain Lady Speaks podcast video cast today. I am Julie Anderson, also known as Brain Lady Julie, and I am really excited for our guest today, Lou Hamilton. You know, we had a great conversation on the Women Entrepreneurs Show, and I just had to have her on the Brain Lady Speaks, and you'll understand why. So let me, before we welcome her, let me go ahead. Well, welcome, Lou. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. Nice to see you again.
Awesome. Awesome. And we are, Lou is tying in from across the pond, as they say, over in the UK. So we're really blessed to have her on the program today. Let me read you a little bit about her technical bio, and then we're going to get into the reason why I wanted to have her on the Brain Lady Speak so bad. Okay. So Lou is an artist, and she is the host of the Brave New Girl podcast and author of Brave New Girl, How to Be Fearless and Fearless. She founded Silk Studios, which is the podcast agency to help you get booked on podcasts, and wrote the book Dare to Share, a definitive guide to tell your story, give value, and gain visibility by guesting on podcasts. Now, as I said, I was really excited to have her on this program because in the process of her last, the interview on the Women Entrepreneurs, it came up a little bit about her story of how she got to that point in her life, how she got to the point of success in her life. So what we're going to talk about today is the trauma turning points in your life that lead you to the next level. And Lou's going to give some of her personal experience and a little bit of advice there on how to utilize that trauma to get to the next level and not let it pull you down. So once again, Lou, welcome. Welcome to the Brain Lady Speak Show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as I said, you know, we had this wonderful conversation talking about business. And in the beginning of that conversation, you kind of talked about the life that you had in the beginning, the trauma that you experienced that led you into success. So you've built this wonderful business around podcasting. You're also an artist, which we're going to talk a little bit about what you did with your artist endeavors over the years. But you kind of had something happen in your life that was a turning point for you. So let's talk about that. Give us a little bit of your background, where you grew up, what you experienced, and share that story with the listeners.
Well, I think the thing with trauma, it can be trauma with a little t and trauma with a capital T. And when I was doing a documentary series on soldiers with PTSD, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on, I was interviewing a psychiatrist who was specialized in EMDR, which is a form of helping you to get through post-traumatic stress disorder. And there were several things that came up that started to make me think about stuff that had happened to me. And one of the psychiatrist that we interviewed talked about layers of trauma leading to post-traumatic stress disorder. So if you'd had something happen to you, but everything else in your life was fine, you were kind of bound to sort of bounce back or be more resilient through that trauma. Whereas if you'd had layers of things happening to you, you were more likely to end up being affected. And so that was the sort of first clue to me that there was stuff in my past that was being triggered when things happened that made me quite a fearful person, made me very anxious. And so when I started to look back, I saw the kind of layers that had happened and to me over time. And you know, one was I lost a very close friend when, you know, we were 8 years old. And, you know, and in those days, when those kind of things happened, they didn't really understand that children needed some kind of therapy or talking through it. It was just, this has happened. It's really sad. And then you move on. And, you know, one thing that my dad did say at the time, which really helped me, was, you know, just keep a little place in your heart for this person. And I clung to that. But there wasn't a culture of therapy or understanding that trauma in children was something that they would carry with them for forever if they didn't do something about it.
Right.
And then when I was in my 20s, I'd been to art college and in London, and then I'd moved to rural Scotland because already my anxiety was sort of getting the better of me living in London, and it being quite a scary time being a young woman back then. It was, you know, you felt very vulnerable. The streets weren't safe. Yeah, maybe things haven't changed that much. And so we moved to rural Scotland, middle of nowhere. And we were living just outside this town called Lockerbie, but we had a sculpture studio. It was actually a church that we'd bought for our artworks for as a studio. And one evening, just before Christmas, we were sitting, I think watching telly or something, and heard this sort of massive, thunderous sort of explosion. But I thought it was thunder, and I went to the window and looked out and couldn't see anything, came back in, you know, was confused, but then sort of just moved on. And then the phone rang, and it was our landlady saying, you know, are you okay? And we were, yes. Yeah, what's happened? And she said, well, a jumbo jet has been blown up out of the sky above you. And then we went back to the window, and sort of all hell had broken loose, and the sky was orange, the where the plane had landed in the town, and a petrol station had exploded, and obviously the plane had blown up as it hit. And so, you know, we were sort of all night really not knowing what we were going to wake up to. And we, like the rest of probably the world, were watching the TV. And even though it was playing outside our window, all we knew was what we were getting on the television, like everybody else. And, you know, there weren't mobile phones then, and all the lines were down. So it was only when we sort of woke up the next morning and walked into town and just saw the carnage. And what happened was I felt very quickly that because I hadn't lost anyone, because I wasn't injured, I didn't know anyone close to me that had died, that somehow I wasn't allowed to grieve. And mm-hmm. Or I didn't give myself permission to grieve. I felt that there was this sort of a hierarchy, and that, you know, my bit of the concentric circles was sort of too far out to allow the feelings that I had. And so I suppressed them once again. And so, you know, moving through my 20s, I lost somebody else who was very, very close to me. And so this kind of layering up of trauma became part of who I was. And so my coping mechanisms were, you know, working hard and playing hard, and whenever kind of anxiety and fear raised its head, I sort of bowed to those. I let them stop me doing things. I would work with kind of fear as my guide. And and then I did a series called Death, which was following, I was directing this documentary on people who had terminal illness. And we, as part of the series, the channel that was commissioning us paid for us to have therapy. And we thought that it would, you know, what would come up was what we were dealing with in the moment, which was, right. you know, being with people who were dying, being mm-hmm. with their families who were trying to come with to terms with the people that they were losing. And then, you know, as people did pass away, then with the families going through the grieving process. And even though that was traumatic on one level, because we were so involved with the families and so sort of part of the process with them, there was almost a therapy in that. But what happened with when we were seeing our own therapist was that all the baggage from the past started to bubble up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that began a long process of sort of untangling. And then, you know, a few years after that, we did this series on soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder. And that was when it started to really make sense what had happened, understanding what had happened and why I had responded in the way that I had and the way that I'd suppressed everything. Right. And so I guess that was sort of the beginning of my 40s, and that kind of following 10 years was very much kind of one of searching for things outside of myself to sort, to try and sort of sort what those were. And it might have been, I don't know, anything from hypnotherapy, which actually I did find very helpful, to I don't know, sort of anything and everything. It was just almost kind of a alternative therapy addiction, you know, to everything outside of myself that could help me. And it was so only when.
So you are now realizing, not to cut you off, but to just kind of pause for a minute, you are realizing now as you are doing this documentary or this, you know, with the soldiers with PTSD. And by the way, they've done wonderful. These studies has been very illuminating to specialists and psychiatrists as well as neuroscientists, and ways to not only deal with it, but also how to prevent it from being as bad as before you're sending a soldier into war, because you know that they're going to have the trauma. And I wanted to pause you primarily because I want to make sure that anyone listening to your story, because it's a very powerful story, and there are going to be individuals who are going to listen to this and kind of have light bulbs go on in their head where they're going, oh, wait a minute, this kind of sounds like me. I had this, and this, but I just always thought it was part of life and never connected it to anxiety that I'm feeling now. So if you're listening, I want you to make sure that you reach out to a professional, or you understand that what we're discussing here on the show is informational and it's helpful. But really seek out, if you're feeling any of these things, seek out the assistant. Lou's obviously going to share some of what she did and what wound up helping her to, you know, use this to come out successful and in her life and come out strong and deal with her anxieties. But I want to encourage anyone who is listening, if you are feeling this, or you want to investigate the EDMR, you want any of that, then by all means, reach out to get the assistance. So Lou, now you've kind of given us that story up to, thank you for letting me pause you to give that little public service message, if you will, but you're going through your 40s trying to investigate things, because now you've made that connection between the anxiety that you would feel in different situations in your life and these traumatic events that had happened. What was that journey like? Bring us to, you know, now continue after I interrupted you there on that part of the journey.
So what I realized with both the death series and the PTSD film was the power of, in this case, film to share stories, and in a broader context, creativity to share stories, change lives, make a difference. And so that became my mantra. That became something that was a sort of a guide for me, that I can do something. I've seen sort of with my own eyes and my own experience, the power of what film can, in that context, what film can do and how storytelling can have an impact. And so I started to feel, right, okay, that's my, in a way, that's my mission. My mission statement is to use creativity to make a difference. So I wasn't quite sure what that would entail. Making films is very hard in terms of trying to get those kind of subject matters off the ground and, you know, raising money for that. And they're quite hard hitting. They're more complicated to make happen than, you know, other kinds of documentaries. So I didn't know what this kind of creativity to make a difference was going to look like, but I knew that that was somehow going to lead me through whatever it was I was going to be exploring. And part of that exploration was the realization that there was something called coaching, which in the UK, we were quite far behind the US, probably about 15 years behind. And so in my 40s, I thought, I'm really interested in this. I like the idea that whereby the therapy was helping me to look backwards and understand what had happened in the past and to somehow kind of make sense of that. But now, having done that, and I understand that that's an ongoing process for many people, but I felt that I wanted something that was more forward looking. And so when I came across coaching, I was like, oh, this is really interesting. This is like, okay, so here you are right now. And what are you going to do with what you've got to move forward? And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to train to be a coach. And so that became, in a way, it felt like a very natural progress from being a documentary director, where you're sitting and asking people questions and listening to people's stories. So it felt like a very sort of natural step. And so I trained as a coach. And part of that was to have, you have to have a coach yourself. You have to be coached in order to learn how to be coached. And that I found incredibly powerful. And it started to sort of help me see a way forward for myself. And so as I was sort of investigating all of these and moving forward and also trying kind of everything and reading, I don't know, every self-help book that I could possibly lay my hands on. And I also came across The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. And that was probably one of the big sort of breakthrough moments was, okay, so it's called The Artist's Way, but really she's talking about creativity and you know, we're, as humans, we're by nature creative. So, you know, even though she uses that word, and she uses the word God, she doesn't mean that to be in a religious sense. She means that in kind of a larger kind of spiritual kind of sense of who we are. And that art is a sort of way of channeling that bigger sense of ourselves. And so, you know, it started with morning pages, she calls them, which is just sort of as soon as you wake up in the morning, you just start writing anything and everything that comes down, and you're not judgmental. You don't even read back what you've written. You're just letting it flow. And it's incredible over time what starts to unfold and unfurl and what you discover about yourself, and you start to find answers within yourself rather than kind of searching out with, you know, outside of yourself. And so that began a kind of long journey really for me. And as I was writing, I started what was kind of morning pages of just anything started to become things that I wanted to write. So I started writing screenplays, and writing became something that was really powerful for me. And at that time, I wasn't working as an artist, you know, and that's where I'd originally been trained. And so it was only when another sort of big kind of trauma turning point for me was, which might be seen as kind of little traumas, but when I turned 50, my children were leaving home. My grandmother, who I was very, very close to, died. And
well, that's a trauma.
That, yeah, it really it was. And you know, she was 94, and you know, I'd been able to spend as much time as I was possibly able to be with her. I'd been able to tell her how much I loved her. I'd been able to really express absolutely everything. So I there were no regrets, and I was with her when she died, which was an incredible gift. Incredibly powerful, and I felt very, very honored to be with her as she passed, and it felt very primal. It felt, you know, almost like the kind of opposite end of childbirth. You know, the way that your body is sort of taken over as you pass on, and it felt like a transition for me too. And you know, my children were leaving home, and I sort of thought, you know, what's for me now? This could potentially be the kind of my third trimester, if you like. And maybe I could fly the nest too. And what would that mean for me? And one day, sort of that year, I was sitting down in the chair that I'd inherited from my grandmother, and I just suddenly had the urge to start drawing. And as I was drawing, out popped this, what became known as Brave New Girl, this little character with no face, often no arms, stick legs and a triangle dress. And as I drew her and with these little kind of positive sayings, posted her online, and she just received this sort of massive kind of affection. And women were saying to me, oh, more, I want to see more of these. And then someone said, oh, you should try and make a book. And it was just one of those things where kind of everything aligned, and I went to find an agent and got an agent very quickly. And then the book was published very, very quickly and published in the States as well. And there she was out there, and with this little character, suddenly I kind of faced what I thought I was drawing for my children going out into the world, because it's called Brave New Girl, How to Be Fearless. I thought it was for them. And actually I thought in the end, I thought, maybe it's for me. This message is for me. There's something in me, or maybe my grandmother is sending these messages through my pencil to think about fear and to really look at what that is and where it's stopping me and where I can actually use that energy to help me move forward and to kind of think bigger and to be more creative. And to I'd been kind of reunited with the kind of artist inside me, and as I was doing these little drawings, which were just pencil drawings and ink drawings, black and white, I then suddenly had the urge to start painting really big, really abstract, and really colorful. And yeah, I
just on fire with creativity at that point.
Yeah.
Very nice. So now, what is the main message of the Brave New Girl? Like, was that kind of you in a sense? You were that brave new girl coming out and doing the things that you, being fearless instead of giving in to fear that maybe had stopped you before?
It definitely was. It was, you know, this little character, if she can't do something, she'll invent a way to do it. She could just do anything, but she was, you know, not a kind of big kind of muscly superhero. She was just a little character, sort of half human, half animal, could, you know, just sort of morphed into things. And that kind of unleashing of my imagination, I just felt like suddenly I could get past the fear or use it. And that made me start thinking about fear in, you know, kind of in the way that it really affects us and holds us back. And so that was when I wrote Fear Less as a coaching book, because, you know, fear, you know, we can't be completely fearless and it'd be foolhardy to try and live that way, because fear is, you know, it's ultimately is there to protect us, but it kind of goes into overdrive, and we're, you know, we get overtaken by fear.
Right.
If, you know, if we've had these traumas, and you know, and so it's learning to accept that fear is there in ways to protect us, and it's there in ways to stop us. And it's understanding where it's helpful and where it's not, and being able to manage that and use it, use the energy. If it, if we think of it as energy, then is it something, an energy that stops us, or an energy that kind of powers us forward? And I always used to sort of help myself think about this in terms of, my partner is one of these people that kind of, you know, jumps out of planes and off bungees, and you know, if he was standing on the edge of a cliff, he would be, you know, with a parachute, whatever.
Right.
He would be filled with excitement, and I would be filled with terror.
Right.
And then I suddenly realized that actually, what we're experiencing in terms of kind of our bodily functions, and physiology,
sure,
is exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm labeling it terror, and he's labeling it excitement.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
It's interesting. Let me throw in a little bit of brain science here, because you touched on the real life expression of what's going on in your brain. And your brain, that fight, flight, that fear center in the brain, is there to protect you. That's, you know, if you're being, you know, chased down an alley, right, your amygdala is going to basically, for lack of a better term, hijack your brain, use that extra energy, right, kind of shut down that prefrontal cortex and use that extra energy to get you to a place of safety. That's it. That's its design. That's what it does. It's to completely save or protect this body. And because of your life experiences going all the way back to losing your friend, to experiencing the trauma of this major catastrophe in your town, and watching that play out in front of you, your subconscious, your lower regions, your memory center connected to the emotion center, connected to the fear center, it's all grabbing this data, this information, and it's storing that. And then as you go through life experiences, if there's any little thing that those lower regions of the brain think are similar to something traumatic that happened back here, it's going to instantly have that same physiological response in the brain. It will take over the prefrontal cortex, which means you can't really think logically, right? You get those feelings that, remember, the gut brain is the second brain because it's got all these neurons in it. So you kind of get that anxiety in your stomach, and then you push back from whatever that event is that might have zero danger for you. But because your brain connects it to something, and I think this is probably where you're going with the rest of the story, because you've already started to turn this into, by dealing with that through the book that you wrote, and then the next, you know, the documentaries you were doing. But being able to understand what's going on in the brain helps you to kind of go, okay, it's just the way my brain's viewing it. Now, how do I deal with it? And I think that's really important for everyone to understand, is that you can, things that are not life-threatening, your brain, your subconscious may think is life-threatening because it's attaching it to something that you've experienced in your life. And this is especially profound when you've had trauma in your life. So I wanted to throw that little, you know, being the brain lady, got to throw in that neuroscience, you know, throw that in there, because this is what you were starting to realize, that neuroscience piece, even though you may not have been labeling it as neuroscience, that's kind of that realization you were coming to at this point in your life. Right. So now continue. You're going, you've done the book, your first book, or I guess your first and second book, because we talked about The Brave New Girl, and then we talked about the fearless, you know, turning the fear into being fearless. So you've got a couple books going on now. You're into your coaching. Continue your story into where that led you as you're processing all of this psychologically in your life.
Yeah. So So I, as you say, I've been looking at it from my own perspective, and I wanted to open that out more. And so I was looking for ways that I could do that beyond the books. And again, in the UK, we were kind of behind the US on something called podcasts. And I'd started to hear about that. And I was like, oh, maybe this is a way of exploring this idea of Brave New Girl further. Perhaps I could have real life Brave New Girls come and talk about their stories of overcoming adversity and discovering what courage is for themselves, and therefore and thereby sharing their learnings and their experiences and what being courageous looks like, can look like. And so those stories, hopefully with the for the listeners, will reflect their own experiences. And so it was quite interesting for me, because when we started, it was a live event. It was being filmed. This was all pre-COVID. And you know, that was very much my comfort zone. It was, you know, going back to my TV days and all of that. And then the pandemic happened, and I knew that the only way that I could continue Brave New Girl was to take it online and learn how to do that sort of remotely. And the only problem was that I'd always been phone phobic. So I was terrorized for anything that was kind of audio and speaking. But you know, the world had other ideas. You know, suddenly that's how we were communicating, either by pure audio or via Zoom. And so I was like, okay, I've got to take the plunge. I've got to overcome this fear. And my desire to make Brave New Girl happen for real, you know, so whereby I could interview women all around the world, that could only happen if I overcame this fear. And my desire was greater than the fear. And so I made it happen. And we're close to 20,000 downloads now. Wow. 2 years on. And so, you know, so it was incredible, these women that would come on and tell their stories. And everyone, you know, they're not kind of not, you know, some are kind of famous, most of them aren't, they're women like you and me. Mm-hmm. Living out their lives with all of the challenges and experiences that we go through. You know, it's a very kind of squiggly line that traces of not very easy path, and you know, the resilience that women people who are living life develop over time, I always find extraordinary. And so as I was doing this podcast, I was thinking, well, the thing is that I can only interview 52 women a year. How can I help more women out there get out there on more podcasts? And so that was when the idea for the podcast guest agency came about, and I thought, yeah, that's what something that I really would like to do. And so that started at the same time, and also because if I wasn't busy enough during the pandemic, I thought this is a really good opportunity to sit and write a book. So, you know, with an agency, you know, it's expensive to be represented, and that didn't sit well with me. So I thought, well, write a book that's a guide to podcast guesting, to sharing your story, to daring to kind of step up and tell your truth and your message and your experiences. And so that's how Dare to Share, the book came about. And what was really fascinating was when I first started writing it at the beginning of the first lockdown, there were 1 million podcasts. And then a year later, when I'd finished writing it, there were 2 million. And now probably there's 3 million, you know, it's just growing exponentially. So this idea that the power of people's stories, mm-hmm. Not just for the telling of it, but for the listeners, for, you know, that's why podcasts are so popular, is because, you know, we by the nature of being human, we're storytellers, and we learn by hearing those stories and learning through other people's mistakes and experiences and traumas. And
And I think too, one of the big powers is the having the ability to, or when your brain hears that you're not alone, right? No one has your exact brain print. It is as unique as your thumbprint, if not more unique, right? Because it is this combination of what I explain as the brain personality connection, right? It's this combination of your DNA codes, right? And what's coded in your DNA is to where your brain wiring is supposed to be. And then all of your life experiences, positive and negative. So the trauma that we've been discussing, you know, that imprints, that creates wiring in your brain. And sometimes we get very, what's wrong with me? Instead of going, wait a minute, there's nothing wrong with me. This is just my life. This is what I've experienced. This is what I've gone through. And when you're able to hear that in other people's stories and see similarities, well, they went through something similar, or they went through something very traumatic and they've been able to, you know, come through and build a business or an entire life and career around this, it's helpful. It's helpful because sometimes we get so introspective, right? We just look at ourselves and this is this, and our brain gets on this crazy little hamster wheel of just, you know, negativity. And we're able to, by hearing other people's stories, I think that's powerful. And I love that you've done that. And I agree. I think the podcasting world has just grown so much, and there's so much powerful information out there. And again, a little disclaimer, if you're listening and you feel the need for help, by all means, I would never want to discourage anyone in any way. I want to make sure that you know to reach out to wherever your local, whatever your local supports are, or just reach out and, you know, connect more with Lou or myself and continue to follow and grow in your own brain journey. That way. I think that's great. So we've popped up a few of the ways. We're running over 30 minutes now, and I like to try to keep it in that sweet spot for podcasters. That's normally the sweet spot, right? Right around that 30 minute. But be sure to stay connected. Lou, I'm honored once again to have had you on this program on The Brain Lady Speaks to hear your story. This was so enlightening to me because I got to hear more. We were talking more technical business on the other podcast, right? But here I was able to get to know, feel like I get to know you a little bit more. So before we completely wrap up, what would be your piece of advice to women in general, or even men, right? The Brain Lady Speaks has a multicultural, gender background or listenership. What would be your advice for someone who has heard your message, heard your story, and feels like, you know what, maybe there are layers. There were things that happened to me. There were things that maybe I need to, you know, what would be your advice to those individuals who hear this message, and what would you suggest be their next step?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I think having the courage to go on that inner journey is incredibly powerful and rewarding. It, you know, it takes work and it's not easy at times, but, you know, when you do reach out and you get the support and you have somebody sort of leading you through that, on that journey, I think that it's incredibly powerful. But I would say that still, even where I'm at now, I do need kind of hacks that I can help in the moment. And I sort of have three. We talked at the very beginning, even before we started recording, about breathing and the power of our breath. And you know why I like breathing is because it's completely democratic. Every single one of us, you know, and bar having breathing problems, we can use our breath to help calm our systems and calm our brain, calm our feelings, regulate our emotions. And so that's with you wherever you are, night or day, it's there. The other one is to kind of trust in the bigger picture, whatever that means to you whilst you're taking the little steps. And my third one is a new one for me, and it's extraordinarily successful. I'm just blown away by this, and it's so easy. It's this one phrase, which is, it's because the other one, the other flip side of this is gratitude, which is quite a, it sort of needs your intellectual brain to kind of engage with being grateful, which when sometimes when you're feeling really down or in a really dark place, the idea of trying to find something to be grateful is sort of almost beyond you. Whereas this thing, it seems to be, I seem to have been able to do in most situations. And it's simply this phrase, look for the beauty. And it's so extraordinarily powerful that you start to, the more you practice when things are going okay, it becomes more and more habitual. But you look for it in anything. It might be a color, it might be a beam of light, it might be something someone said, or suddenly, you know, I was cycling along today and I heard a piece of music somewhere and I was like, oh, there's the beauty. It might be a passing comment, it might be a kid roller skating down the road laughing and, you know, beaming and happy as anything. These tiny glimmers of beauty are, you know, as humans we're hardwired to feel joy when we see beauty, and usually we wait for beauty to hit us on the back of the head. You know, it's like, oh yeah, there's an amazing sunset, yes I recognize that. But when you actively seek it in every moment, it pulls you out of your head and looking to the thing that will stimulate a good mood feeling. So this is new to me, so I'm kind of really, really passionate about it, and it just seems to be working. So yeah, I would go with that.
I love it. I love it. I love the last one too, because in essence, what you're doing when you do that on a daily basis, when things are even positive and fine, but you're literally rewiring your brain, and you are training your brain to see that everywhere. Right. And because you might not be the type of person that sees it. You may say, well, you know, I'm just not a positive person. I just don't. But you can train your brain. Your brain is very malleable. Neuroscience has shown us beautiful things on that topic and how we can rewire thought patterns and we can rewire the way that we view things. And that's a perfect example of what you're doing. You know, when you train your brain to always see that, then it pops up in every situation, in every day of every life. So I love that. Well, Lou, thank you once again for sharing your story and sharing your journey with us. I appreciate that so much. We've popped up on the screen how people can stay connected with you. I think as we were talking, we had some links that were put up for how to get the books if you're interested in the books. And I would love for, if you're listening to this, because this does go out as a podcast as well as the video cast on YouTube. If you're listening, all of the links that we've been talking about, those are going to be in the show description on the show page. So once you get to a place where you're not driving or you can look at a computer, you can find all of those links on how to stay connected with our guest today. And if you want to stay connected with me, you can follow me as Brain Lady Julie on Instagram, Brain Lady Julie on LinkedIn. I'm all over the different social. If you just look for Brain Lady Julie, you're going to find me. You can also reach out if you have ideas or thoughts for great person to interview, someone as dynamic as Lou, then of course, reach out, send us an email at info@brainladyspeaker.com, not Brain Lady Speaks, but brainladyspeaker.com. And that way we can interview them. We can share these stories out, because the more people hear, as you said, Lou, you know, people, when you hear the stories, you're able to grow. So with that, I want to thank everybody. And thank you again, Lou, for being on the program. And join us on a regular basis for the Brain Lady Speaks show. And until next time, take a nice deep breath in through your nose, out through your nose, and simply enjoy every moment.